This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight,
South African President Jacob Zuma was booed off the stage Monday as he tried to address a meeting of the country's largest labor union. Analysts see evidence of deepening rifts in the ruling African National Congress and Zuma's increasing isolation.
That's Tuso Kamalo reporting from Johannesburg. We'll have the full story coming up. Also, the Italian news agency reports police broke up a gang of neo-Nazis who allegedly organized night attacks against migrants. There's another warning today that the humanitarian crisis in Somalia is getting worse, and Nigeria's civil society calls on President Muhammadu Buhari to take an extended period of sick leave. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Human Rights Watch says 45 civilians in the Central African Republic have been killed over the past 3 months by armed groups. They have been fighting each other in the central province of Waka at the border that separates the mostly Muslim north from the largely Christian south. A spokesman for HRW says civilians are often caught in the crossfire. Reuters says one witness to a recent attack said fighters from the Fulani Union for Peace in Central Africa killed four of his children, including a seven-month-old baby. Violence has flared in the country since 2013 when a mostly Muslim rebel group overthrew the government and began a killing spree. In response, Christians formed self-defense militias. Well, there's another warning today that the humanitarian crisis in Somalia is getting worse. UNICEF, the UN Children's Fund, says about 1.4 million children are projected to suffer from acute malnutrition this year. That's 50% more than estimated in January. Reuters reports the updated figure includes 275,000 children who may face what's called severe acute malnutrition. UNICEF says that means there are nine times more likely to die if they become infected with cholera or measles. A UNICEF spokesperson says the agency has treated 56,000 children for the most severe form of malnutrition since January, a nearly 90% jump compared to last year. In other news on Somalia, the Associated Press reports Germany says it will double the aid it's giving to deal with hunger and drought to more than $150 million. The pledge was made yesterday during a surprise visit to Mogadishu by Germany's foreign minister. Last month, Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari ended nearly 2 months of medical leave in Britain. When he returned on March 10th, he said he would need rest and further medical tests. Now Nigeria's civil society is calling on Buhari to go back on sick leave for an extended period. AFP reports Buhari, who's 74, has missed the last two out of three cabinet meetings and did not attend Friday prayers last week. His spokesman says the president is working from home and that his health is nothing to worry about. Nigerian Nobel laureate Wole Soyinka is questioning why Buhari is hiding his health. He says the president is supposed to understand he's public property. South African President Jacob Zuma was booed off the stage yesterday as he tried to address a meeting of the country's largest labor union. Tuso Kamalo reports from Johannesburg. Analysts see evidence of deepening rifts in the ruling African National Congress and Zuma's increasing isolation.
When President Zuma arrived at the main event of the May Day celebrations in Bloemfontein, Free State Province, to deliver his speech to thousands of workers, a section cheered him. But a larger group sang and chanted anti-Zuma slogans. Zuma left the event without uttering a word. Organizers aborted the rally. In the past, Such disruptions have come from the opposition and anti-Zuma groups, but this time it came from the members of the Congress of the South African Trade Unions, who are largely ANC supporters. Political analyst Soma Totafikeni says pressure is mounting on the ANC to deal with Zuma, who has been battered by corruption scandals.
If ANC can't begin to imagine a post-Zuma ANC, then South Africa will begin to get used to a post-ANC South Africa. And that is the political cost of not reflecting on some of the weaknesses attracted by the president from one time to the other.
The presidency has not issued a statement about the incident Monday, but Free State Province ANC Chairman Ace Magashule remains adamant Zuma is not going anywhere until his term expires in 2019.
The ANC says this is the man who must be leading the country and our masses will say so, and they have said so. They have voted Zuma. There's no way you can say Zuma must go, because if you say so, who are you?
But Monday's incident points to tensions within the ANC's alliance partners, COSATU, and the South African Communist Party. The two publicly called on Zuma to resign last month after a controversial cabinet reorganization. Analysts say the alliance, which has assisted ANC to win all national elections since 1994, may be in danger. The opposition greeted Monday's events enthusiastically. Economic Freedom Fighters spokesperson Mbuyiseni Ndlozi called it a boost for the upcoming no-confidence vote against Zuma in parliament.
We are very inspired, and we will sustain their effort in making sure that Zuma is not legitimized when we go back to parliament. We'll make sure that that particular action and sentiment expressed finds articulation in parliament.
Meanwhile, the Constitutional Court is considering an opposition request for the no-confidence vote to be a secret ballot. The ANC holds a majority in parliament, but analysts say a secret ballot could see parliament members from SACP, COSATU, and even the ANC join the opposition. Thuso Khumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
The Italian news agency reports police have broken up a gang of neo-Nazis who allegedly organized night attacks against migrants. Six people in their early 20s are under investigation. They're accused of arson attacks in the province of La Spezia in the Liguria region. That's between the cities of Pisa and Genoa in northwestern Italy. Police believe they're responsible for attacks against migrants over the past 2 years. They say the gang also allegedly targeted the Catholic charity group Caritas for helping migrants. Authorities say the gang used social media to stir up hatred and attract recruits. Police seized knives and other weapons, as well as propaganda material and instructions for making explosives. Britain wants to boost trade ties with Africa after it leaves the European Union, a project some have called Empire 2.0. British plans to build on historical links with its former empire could face resistance in many African countries as exporters face years of uncertainty over future trading relations with the UK. Henry Ridgewell reports.
Britain says leaving the EU will allow it to go global and throw off the shackles it claims the EU has imposed on its trading ambitions. On a recent visit to Uganda, Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson said the first stop would be Britain's former colonies.
We are re-entering the Commonwealth, re-entering the rest of the global economy.
That re-entry has been dubbed Empire 2.0 in Britain. But in many former colonies, memories of British rule are at best mixed, says British Conservative Party lawmaker Kwasi Kwarteng, an author on the legacy of the British Empire and a key figure in the campaign to leave the EU.
My own family is from West Africa. Ghana, which is a Commonwealth country, was a former colony. And people have very mixed memories of the empire. So to try and relive that past, I think, is a completely ridiculous and forlorn exercise. But what we can do is to try and use those relationships that were forged some of them through the empire and then latterly through the Commonwealth.
The legacy of the British Empire is still debated decades after its collapse. In South Africa, statues of the colonialist Cecil Rhodes were torn down in 2015, despite a long list of atrocities, such as the brutal suppression of the Mau Mau uprising in Kenya in the 1950s. Kwarteng believes the old links forged in empire days will aid new trade deals.
There's a vast world out there, nearly 80% of global GDP, which is outside the EU. And a lot of that GDP is taken up by Commonwealth countries.
Critics highlight that almost half of British exports go to the European Union, $288 billion worth every year. In comparison, exports to Africa total just $21.3 billion. To boost that trade, Britain wants quick trade deals with emerging economies. But African nations should be cautious, according to Matt Grady of the charity Tradecraft, which advocates fair trade and global justice.
The African countries have indicated that their priorities are regional integration and cooperation. So now is not really the time for the UK to be trying to negotiate deals with African countries that will undermine those priorities. It will undermine their ability to develop their manufacturing and their processing sectors.
Brexit poses other risks. Britain imports $9.7 billion worth of goods from Africa, including produce like coffee from Kenya or wine from South Africa.
Producers in developing countries, they don't know what tariffs they're going to face to sell into Britain. That means that supply chains, I mean, you know, decisions are being made now for 2 years down the line in uncertain conditions.
Citing that uncertainty, the head of the African, Caribbean and Pacific Group of Nations said this week that a free trade deal with Britain should be delayed until at least 6 years after Britain's EU exit. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. Past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Human Rights Watch says 45 civilians in the Central African Republic have been killed over the past 3 months by armed groups. There's another warning today that the humanitarian crisis in Somalia is getting worse. And Nigeria's civil society calls on President Muhammadu Buhari to take an extended period of sick leave. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The United States Agency for International Development, or USAID, has spent over $136 million for drought response in Zimbabwe. The drought has threatened more than 4 million people with hunger. The U.S. agency says its response has reached about half of those at risk. Godwin Mangudya reports from Harare.
Jason Taylor heads the Office of Humanitarian Assistance and Resilience at USAID in Zimbabwe. He says the U.S. has assisted Zimbabweans affected by the drought with access to food and water. His office also helps with nutritional and sanitation surveillance and response. Taylor says his agency is also sponsoring long-term efforts to improve food production.
One of them is through our development food security programs, which are two multi-year programs, 5 years each. Those are valued at around $100 million, and those target around 600,000 food insecure beneficiaries in some of the neediest districts.
There's also a $20 million initiative called Feed the Future. It's a two-part program focusing on enhancing the livestock and agriculture productivity and marketing. Taylor says USAID's robust drought response has been enhanced by assistance from Britain, the European Union, China, and the Zimbabwe government itself. Since 2015, USAID has responded to drought by supporting the expansion of the World Food Programme's Lean Season Assistance Initiative. It provided a full basket of monthly food rations for the most food-insecure people in hardest-hit areas. The agency has also scaled up its two ongoing food security initiatives, enhancing nutrition, stepping up resilience and enterprise, Ensure and Amalima. They aim to address underlying causes of chronic food insecurity and malnutrition in rural areas. A bumper harvest is expected in most parts of the country, but some areas, particularly in the south, will remain food insecure.
So those are going to be areas that are going to be important to continue to focus on in terms of these long-term interventions to help them become more viable agriculturally in the future.
Taylor says USAID is working with the Food and Agricultural Organization, the Zimbabwean government, and other partners to eradicate the fall armyworm, which is threatening maize and other crops.
There's a lot of questions on the sorts of pesticides that are most useful, and I know that the government has been involved in testing these pesticides. We've been in contact with other research organizations to understand exactly what tools are going to be available, and once those sorts of effective approaches are identified, finding suppliers that can supply these chemicals in a consistent and safe way, that's the next step.
Taylor says the arrival of the fall armyworm is new to Southern Africa and poorly understood. As a result, it's difficult to project its impact on the current harvests. The U.S. official says he can't say if there will be any cuts to USAID humanitarian assistance to Zimbabwe under the Trump administration. He adds that his agents will continue to do what is best for Zimbabwe with the resources available. Reporting for VOA, this is Godwin Mangudla.
Autism is a communication and behavior disorder that now affects one out of 68 children here in the United States. The condition is lifelong and manifests itself in children beginning around the age of 18 months to 2.5 years. 80% of those diagnosed with autism are male. Dr. John McLaughlin is an educator specializing in autism. He authored the new book, How Autism is Reshaping Special Education, The Unbundling of IDEA. He says getting the proper treatment for an autistic child can be a daunting task for parents. And for parents of autistic children in Africa, diagnosing and caring for an autistic child is far more challenging than in the United States. Dr. McLaughlin spoke with me about the challenges parents in Africa face in getting the proper treatment for an autistic child.
Autism is a communication disorder that affects children and adults. It's a lifelong disorder, if you will. Children with autism can do better with the right therapies and treatment. It's an issue that generally occurs in children when they are young. We don't think of children as being born with autism, but they are generally manifesting the disability or the symptoms of autism somewhere around 18 months to 2.5, 2 years or so. Kids who have had a normal developmental track to that point sometimes will not speak or withdraw from hugs and direct eye contact and somewhat go inside of themselves. Very frightening and very alarming to loving parents to see this, and that's generally when they try to find out what's wrong with their child. It's more commonly found in boys. Probably 80% of people with autism are male. I'm not sure why, but that is part of the characteristics of the disability.
How can a parent tell if their child is autistic?
Autism is highly varied, even though I described it as in black and white terms a moment ago. It's a disability or disease that has a wide range of symptomology. But for parents of younger children, the issues are really around touch, eye contact, focus, and language. Language is the key thing. If children have begun to develop language in an appropriate fashion with their other age peers or other playgroup, just like their older brother or sister did, then things are tracking pretty good. But if the parents notice something that's significantly different, then they should begin to have some concerns and seek professional help from a pediatrician, particularly a developmental pediatrician or a child psychiatrist are good people to seek a diagnosis or an evaluation of a child like this. The earlier you get the diagnosis, the earlier you get the treatment, the much greater effect in the positive way for the child will occur.
When you look at autism, say, for instance, in developing countries such as those in Africa, how can a parent access the proper education and the proper care for their children with autism?
Well, it's very, very different in Africa. First, Africa is so varied as a nation, from highly developed cities to an overwhelming majority of the continent still developing in nature. A lot of my comments are really toward the developing parts of Africa. You don't see the incidence of autism in Africa like you do in the United States. When I began my profession in special education 40 years ago, we believed that one in every 10,000 children were affected by autism. Today, that number is one in 68. That's a dramatic difference in change, and a lot of it is in our change of the definition and our abilities to identify autism. But in Africa, we don't have any idea what the incidence is. But we do know that those children who are identified with autism in Africa tend to be harder hit, more nonverbal children, and they tend to be diagnosed at a much older age, say age 8. But if you're going to be diagnosing a child with autism and not getting around to it, so to speak, until age 8, the fact that they are nonverbal doesn't surprise me. It means that they did not get the early intervention that is so critical to changing the trajectory of a child's life, a child with autism's life. There's just generally a lack of knowledge, even among physicians, about autism spectrum disorder.
How can autism awareness be raised in Africa then?
A couple of key things that would help. One is clearly education of healthcare providers, primary care physicians, pediatricians, mental health workers throughout developing Africa need to understand how to screen for autism, need to understand the symptomology and how to interact with parents. Beyond that, though, you've got to have the whole culture of looking to those people for help first rather than looking to more tribal ways. So I think there's a need to be culturally sensitive and outreach to tribal and supernatural healers that will help them understand, too, that they see parents are bringing children with these symptoms that maybe they should realize it's probably out of their ability as a tribal healer to manifest change in this child and maybe refer them into a more medically designed area.
Dr. John McLaughlin is an educator specializing in autism. He authored the new book, How Autism is Reshaping Special Education, The Unbundling of IDEA. He spoke with me from Nashville, Tennessee. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of African News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, John Dryden, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, we'll discuss the latest political developments in Zambia. Will President Edgar Lungu declare a state of emergency after public buildings were torched in attacks? He blames the violence on opposition members protesting the arrest of their leader, Hakainde Hichilema. An in-depth discussion on Zambia on the next Straight Talk Africa.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria is transmitted by mosquito bites, but there are some things you can do to reduce your risk. Wear light-colored, loose-fitting clothing, including long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. Eliminate any standing water around your home, including water that collects in wood piles, taps, puddles, old buckets, water jugs, and containers that livestock drink from. And If you can get one, use an insecticide-treated bed net to cover you and your children while you sleep.
That was a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.